This is Vatican Radio. For 5 years, the Syrian city of Aleppo has been a key battleground in the country's brutal civil war. This former financial hub was home to 250,000 Christians with hopes and dreams. Now it has become a place of loss and suffering. With a fragile ceasefire in place, aid agencies are keeping up their work to help those who have lost everything as a result of the conflict. Head of Press and Information for Aid to the Church in Need, UK, is John Pontifex, who recently returned from a visit to the city. He was able to see it firsthand, the devastation wrought and the lives torn apart there. But as he told me, Lydia O'Kane, what he also witnessed were stories of courage, determination and faith.
Well, obviously, I'd seen a lot of the photographs and footage on the TV, and I'd had reports from Aid to the Church in Need project staff and indeed bishops working in the region. But nothing really quite prepares you for the reality of the situation on the ground. And what really becomes apparent as you go into Aleppo is that really this was a fully functioning, very modern city with all the various elements that you'd expect of a modern city. And yet here it was basically trashed, with basic services not functioning, with people living as refugees in their own town, in their own city. And to see the juxtaposition of obviously what was as opposed to what is now was very searing. It was very difficult to really comprehend, to compute what your eyes were telling your brain, if you like. And we found ourselves aghast and unable really to make sense of the scale of this devastation that we saw all around us. And our hearts reached out to those having to live in this situation.
Perhaps you could tell us, just regarding the whole humanitarian situation, how people are living, where they're getting their next meal from, from that kind of perspective.
Well, what you've got to bear in mind with Aleppo is that they obviously had an electric grid, they had fully functioning power, water and all the other services, and all of these things have been bombed or not working. And as a result of that, people are entirely dependent. Most people do not have jobs. Most people don't have an income. Most people are entirely dependent on outside help. There used to be free delivery of medical provision, no longer. So one of the things that really impressed me when I went there was the extent to which a whole emergency relief program had been rolled out and was rolling out before our eyes, with aid distribution points in different parts of the city, with soup kitchens, with people queuing up to receive items, and anything from bedding right the way through to pots and pans, systems by which people could obtain vouchers or coupons for their quota of electricity and the provision of mazoud oil for the heating oil. It seemed, from what we could see at least, that there was quite a sophisticated system of aid, and we spent quite a lot of time as a charity working alongside those from other charities, because Aid to the Church in Need is one of a number of organisations that have been asked to play our part in essentially keeping the city alive and stopping people from essentially going on the into the state of being almost on the breadline and facing starvation. And, for example, people would say, normally when you visit somebody, they offer you a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or whatever. In our situation, it's so cold in Aleppo, what you're offered is a blanket. This is the sort of culture in which people live these days. And the cost of living, that essentially it's very, very expensive to provide yourself with just electric light. For two electric light bulbs and a television, it can cost up to a third of an average salary of an average public sector worker. And this gave you a real profound sense of how people were struggling just to survive. And I was very impressed by the work of Aid to the Church Need in different situations, reaching out to those who really have nothing. And the point really that comes across very, very strongly is that, yes, the world's attention has moved on from Aleppo, that there are other crises that are begging media attention. But the Aleppo crisis is actually going to enter its worst period at the very time when people's attention is diverted, because it needs that attention if people are going to provide the ongoing donations and other support for people to get through this terrible period.
John, what is the sense of, dare I say, the sense of morale like among the people? I mean, from the personal accounts that you got while you were there, is there a sense of just feeling downtrodden? Is there a sense of hope? What was the general consensus for you?
Well, when you speak to a bishop and he's standing outside his bombed cathedral and he says, well, do you realise that in the last 4 years we had 60 bombs of different shapes and sizes fall in our in this area, you get a sense of just how desperate he must feel. And Archbishop Jean-Clément Jambard of Aleppo spoke to us with tears in his eyes as he described the work that he'd done to build up his ancient cathedral and the whole complex there, and it being smashed to smithereens. And he'd had to vacate that premises, not least because it was no longer safe, not least because of the ongoing bombardment, but also for fear of kidnapping. Two fellow bishops from Aleppo have been kidnapped and have not been seen since. So this really, really bears down on the people, and there is this sense of deep devastation and indeed despair. And many of the people we spoke to made it very clear that they were frightened, traumatized, and they were just and sick. When we spoke to those providing medical help, stress-related illnesses, heart trouble, respiratory trouble, nervous dispositions of different types and descriptions were too many to enumerate. And we had this sense that the personal toll that this crisis has inflicted on people is only now beginning to become apparent. But in the midst of all that, we were deeply, deeply impressed by examples of courage. And one really stood out for us. One evening, we went with a group organized by Sister Annie DeMargin, who has been providing help for 650 Christian families with help from aid to the Church in Need. And her group took us to what had been, only a couple of weeks earlier, the front line of the conflict between government forces and the rebel forces. And this was an area that was absolutely blacked out. The government didn't want people to see just how badly damaged it was. So at night, this place is not lit up. And so you went to see this a particular couple living on this front line in the Medan district. And they spoke about how, as this couple, one is called Sarkis and the other is called Annie, they spoke about how they'd lived in this flat facing ongoing bombardment, and that when the bombardment was at its worst, they would hide in in their little bathroom, or if it was really bad, they'd go to the stairwell. And they'd actually leave the windows of their flat open, because that actually meant their windows had a greater chance of surviving the bomb blast as opposed to being shattered by the force of the blast. And they said to us that we at Aid to the Church in Need, through the volunteers there, had been providing them with food vouchers, with Mazoud heating oil, and with clothes. We saw the clothes that had been given to them, and they're quite disabled in different respects. So they're pretty well marooned in this flat. And they said it is a miracle that we survived. And it's more than a miracle that the Sister Annie DeMargin group were able to come and find us. And they were just full of delight to see us and to see the group come and visit. And it's those stories of courage and determination and faith that really resonated with us and made us feel that the work of God is to be found in Aleppo, and that in many ways, when the darkness is all the greater, even small chinks of light somehow stand out more strongly. And that, for us, came across very strongly with that visit to Annie and Sarkis.
Just regarding, you know, obviously we're looking at the numbers of Christians in Aleppo have fallen greatly. Those who remain, Is there the feeling that they really want to stay, that they don't want to leave their city, or is there a feeling that people just have had enough and they want to go?
I think many people are in what we would call a holding position. They're marking time, they're seeing how things break. We're entering a new period in the story for Aleppo. The ceasefire is fragile. We have to remember that it's only the city centre that is held by the government forces. You've got the wider district, which is still under rebel control to a great extent. And that if you look at Aleppo as a whole, only 10% of it is in government hands. So there's only one route in and out of Aleppo. So people, although there is a peace, and although there are great plans to rebuild, literally and in other ways, the people we spoke to said, we're going to just wait and see, and see how things develop. Many of them, though, spoke of their great desire to stay, that if they were provided with security, if they were provided with repairs to their houses, if they were provided with the possibility of getting a job and therefore being able to have all the things that all of us need to survive, that, yeah, they would definitely stay. And there was one young woman called Rana, who in her mid-20s, who was helping at an aid distribution point and doing a certain amount of administration there, managing all the various types of people getting aid. And she explained that actually she wanted to stay come what may, that she felt she had a duty to come and to be there. She'd risked her life to come to Aleppo to join her fiancé, and she wasn't going to go out now. And that was quite remarkable, because many of the young people, the very ones who want to leave, particularly young men, they fear call up into the armed services of Bashar al-Assad, or being captured and being used in military capacity by rebels. So young men in particular have left. The elderly are the most likely to stay, like Sarkis and Annie. They have nowhere to go. They haven't the mobility. They don't have the money. And it's just too much to think of to start afresh. But so you've got a split hand there. You've got some not clear, some wanting to go, and some determined to stay, some with no option but to stay. But what's desperately, desperately sad is that a community which was thriving, where there were 250,000 or more Christians, and many of them are living in a very prosperous environment with good jobs, with good prospects, highly educated, making use of Aleppo's great university. And now they're all basically dependent on outside help. And you just cannot imagine how the morale has been desperately damaged by this sudden collapse in fortunes. And that's why we wanted to visit so soon after the crisis, because we wanted to make it clear to them that all the reports that they'd heard about the West sort of playing with Aleppo rather than dealing with helping the people were not true, and that actually we as a community wanted to be there. And yes, we had people saying to us, the West, just leave us alone. And we wanted to say, well, whatever else, we as a Christian family, as a Catholic family, want to be with you as part of our family. We want to share in your story, and we want to help you. And we want to provide whatever we can so that you can survive this winter, which is pretty deep, pretty hard. And we want to enable you to feel that you can get through this, and that together we're stronger.
Just on a final note, John, I mean, you talked about the ceasefire, you talked about moving on to hopefully rebuilding. But as you also said, a story like this goes out of the news, and people are still facing what they have to face. There's an awful lot. There's a huge road ahead, though, isn't there? I mean, the aid agencies and aid to the church in need are in there for the long haul. But also, maybe what's needed also the international community as well. It's a complex thing, isn't it? I mean, there's so much more, and there's so much more to do to really get this country and Aleppo back to the jewel that it was, as it were.
You're absolutely right. The scale of what lies ahead is almost unimaginable in every respect, and it can be. I'm sure it is for the bishops, and they alluded to this, in fact, that it's unimaginable. what they face. And I suppose that in front of them lies actually the business of just keeping people alive. Actually, that is first and foremost the only thing they can see in front of them. It's another day when they will be able to actually plan and rebuild, although they have great vision of doing so, and they need to be able to show to their community that they have those plans, because that in itself builds up confidence. But I think in front of them right now is still this business of how do we keep our people alive when they don't have basic provision of services. And yes, there are many, many aid agencies providing excellent resources, but that work will have to continue, because it'll take, as you indicate, it'll take so long to rebuild, and you cannot rebuild Syria's largest city in 5 minutes. It's going to take years. And there's going to be tough times ahead. And the tragedy of it is that we're going to have to wait. But what we're saying as a charity, with the food that we're providing, with the medicine that we're providing, with the clothes that we're providing, with the pastoral visits that we're providing, with the support for the bishops so they can bring Christ to the people, what we're saying is that we're with you. And that we will build with you a new future as and where we can, and we will not abandon you. And that's the theme of our campaign that we're building up for Aleppo. Please don't forget, don't give up on Aleppo. And we beg your listeners to heed that and to answer the prayers of people like Sarkis, Annie, Bishop Jean-Bar, and many, many others who need us right now.